Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund.
Recorded at the University of Minnesota, you are listening to Radio K's Real College Podcast, the arts and culture program for any of the stories of Minnesota that you won't hear anywhere else. I'm your host, Matthew Curtis, and thank you for joining us.
This week, we are conquering the final frontier. We are pointing our microphones towards the heavens tonight
in our special space edition of the Real College Podcast.
We will learn the mysteries of the skies above us while being brought back down to Earth through the lens of the Twin Cities. Max Fuller packs his bags and prepares to move way, way, way upstate. Jared Hemming plays us the soundtrack of The Place With No Sound. And Noel Clark looks up at the stars from his campsite.
And it all starts right now on the Real College Podcast.
Although we may not be living like the Jetsons quite yet, mankind has finally reached a point technologically that we can venture out into the cosmos. Reporter Max Fuller has got the scoop on the future of space exploration.
A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it is a period of civil war. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. Wait. My bad. Wrong story. Let me start over. Not so long ago in the Milky Way, there exists a species called humans. All humans are pretty much good for is eating, sleeping, pooping, repopulating, and messing stuff up, and now they're looking to take that business to the intergalactic level. With the dual narratives of global warming and overpopulation playing out around the world, many are calling for humans to relocate to the vast beyond that is space. From the Mayan lunar calendars to the Egyptian pyramids' precise alignment with the stars to the space race of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we've always been fascinated with space. Although, space doesn't seem to be a priority right now in the U.S.
The amount of money NASA gets every year from the federal budget, the budget has stayed pretty flat, not just in inflationary terms, but in actual real terms, it's stayed pretty flat for almost the last 20 years.
That's Dwayne Digger Carey, an ex-astronaut from Minnesota that flew on a mission to the Hubble Space Telescope in 2002. Digger says he's concerned about the lack of government funding for space exploration.
I don't know what the exact number is, but it's well south of $25 billion a year. And I know $25 billion is a lot of money, but that represents for every dollar you pay in taxes, for every dollar that gets pulled out of your paycheck for working over there at the radio station, you know, for every dollar that you pay to the feds, less than one penny of that is going to space exploration. And I just think that, you know, the greatest exploration nation on Earth can do a little bit better than that.
While some may dismiss space exploration as a waste of money, Digger tells me he fears that this lack of funding and initiative may prove costly for the country in the long run.
Every great country, every great nation has had a vital exploration program. And those that have fallen from superpower status, one of the harbingers of that particular failure was the fact that they turned inward and no longer showed an interest in exploration.
So if the government isn't going to get us to space, then who is? Enter Mars One, a company with the modest mission of establishing a permanent human colony on Mars by 2027. The nonprofit organization founded by Dutch entrepreneur Bas Lansdorp plans to launch a robotic lander and orbiter to Mars in 2017 to set up a colony before sending a team of four astronauts up to the planet as soon as 2026. The application process began in 2013 with 2,761 people from all around the world vying for a chance to make human history. 2 years later, the selection pool is down to just 100.
I never thought it would get this far. I just thought it would be like, yeah, I'm throwing my hat in the ring.
I got a chance to speak with Mead McCormick, one of the final 100 candidates for the mission to Mars.
It was just like some minor news story, like, look at this. Anybody can apply to go to Mars if they want. I don't think it's crazy. Like, I don't. So I felt like obligated at least to apply just for the sake of, like, I support that idea, and I don't think that it's crazy, and I think that it's an opportunity.
Now, Mead is a 27-year-old art school graduate barely out of college, so you may find yourself asking, why Mead?
What makes you one of the first people that could be on Mars?
Well, it's not the same thing that they would choose astronauts for. I don't have to be a doctor or a physicist or an engineer. So there's plenty of those people, extremely smart people, who are in the running. I think they're looking more for people who are team-oriented or community-oriented and people who are adaptable. I think it's more about, like, kind of what you're made of in terms of dealing with things rather than what knowledge you have in your brain.
Well, great. We've got an organization that wants to take us to space, and it seems like they're planning things pretty responsibly, so everything's all good, right?
Houston, we have a problem.
Of course there's a problem.
There is a company, Mars One. I don't give them much chance for being able to follow through on what they're doing, because I don't know where they're going to get the money, get the spacecraft, the rockets, and the expertise to be able to do what they say they're going to do in about 10 years is when they're saying.
That was Buzz Aldrin, the second man to ever set foot on the moon. And if Buzz is hating on your mission to Mars, you might have some problems. Buzz is not alone in his criticism, as many scientists have come out to critique Mars One for its timetable, various safety issues, and its $2 billion budget. NASA even came out recently and said Mars One doesn't stand a chance without its help. Ultimately, though, Mead isn't really worried about the criticism. She actually thinks it'll help.
Really, it's important that there's criticism, because that's how, like, Mars One is going to be able to make the mission better. They're going to troubleshoot all of these questions. They have to find answers for all of these questions and all of these doubts. And they have to back them up in a scientifically accurate way.
So it appears in our never-ending reach for the stars, we may finally have something in our grubby little grasp. The when and how remain to be seen, but one thing is for sure. When our lease here on Earth is up, we'll be sure to bring down the property value of Mars. And who knows? Maybe we'll find some friends out there. Or maybe they've already found us.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns,
this is Max Fuller.
Perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water.
DJ and volunteer at Radio K, and for Culture Q, this is Soundscope. Since, well, the Big Bang, outer space has always been a wonder for artists across centuries. This week, we're looking at songs that use the cosmos as themes for longing and desire. Here's Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie. In this song, Bowie uses space to trace the origin of his famous alien Ziggy Stardust. He paints Ziggy as a passionate creature made to rock the world in its apocalyptic final years. Don't fake it, baby. This is Subterranean Homesick Alien by Radiohead. In this song, singer Tom York fantasizes about leaving his boring daily life. How will he do it? By being abducted by aliens, he decides. Here's York on his interstellar journey.
a country lane, late at night when I'm driving. Take me on board that beautiful ship. Show me the world as I love to see.
Notice the atmospheric guitar work setting the song's galactic scene. While our last two tracks explored space as an escape, this next one turns to the moon for romantic advice. This is My Moon, My Man by Feist.
My moon, my man, so changeable and such a lovable end to me. My care, my coat, leave all the high note, there's nowhere to go.
With this song, Feist spins the old cliché of stargazing for guidance. In the end, Feist ditches her man for the moon itself. She finds the moon's phase to be more reliable than her own relationship.
Take it slow, take it easy on me. It's just a lie, just a lie, don't please. Take it slow, take it easy on me. It's just a lie, just a lie.
Here's Grimes with Vowels Equals Space and Time. I admit it's a little tricky to make out exactly what Grimes is saying. However, she seems to be talking about having an identity crisis. For Grimes, being oneself is easier in outer space than on Earth. That is, if you've got a little weirdness in you. Here's another dose of weirdness. This is Sun Ra with Space Is the Place. Aside from being a legendary jazz artist, Sun Ra believed that he was from Saturn. His devotion to space ran deep. Around the time this song was recorded in the early 70s, Sun Ra was appointed as an artist in residence at the University of California, Berkeley. While there, he taught a course called The Black Man in the Cosmos.
Faith is the place, yes, faith is the place. Outer space is a blessed place.
I hope you've all learned just how important outer space is for artists. I'm Jared Hemming.
Hi, I'm Matthew Curtis, and I'm here to present this week's Weekly Release Spotlight, a new album that we feature every week in partnership with The Electric Fetus. This week's record is Waxahachie's third LP, Ivory Trip, released on Merge Records. To read a full review of the album by copywriter Sam Siegel and download a free track from the album, just log on to RadioK.org.
Good for days.
Once again, that was Breathless by Waxahachie from their latest LP, Ivory Trip, on Radio K's Culture Cue. You can check out a full review of the album written by copywriter Sam Siegel, as well as download a free track on RadioK.org. In 2007, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources wanted to know why people in Minnesota were spending less time outdoors. Well, they found three problems. People lack skills, equipment, and the time to venture out into the wilderness. To address this, the DNR created the ICAN program. Former producer Noel Clark spent a day in the woods with the ICAN campers.
Welcome to ICAN Camp. My name's Nick, and I'll be your instructor for the workshop, and I'm really excited to have you guys here.
It's 10 a.m. on a bright Saturday morning, and workshop instructor Nick Cox welcomes six families to Crow Wing State Park, their home for the next 24 hours. First order of business is tent setup.
We're going to take out what I think is the funnest thing to put together with our tents, our tent poles. There should be four tent poles in each one. There are two silver poles, and before you guys get going with these, I'm going to show you...
While the adults fumble with poles and rig up rain flies, Nick gets the children's attention with an activity designed to teach them how to identify animals in the wild.
Yes! I knew it! Oh, a rain fox!
Wolf!
Yeah, wolf. It's a white coyote.
For sure.
Do you guys want to learn what each of these are?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to set them on the tarp.
This is really shiny. I don't know why they...
Once camp is set up, campers are welcome to participate in any number of outdoor activities, such as hiking, fishing, photo scavenger hunts, or just relaxing with the family in the park.
So I wrote down the first coordinates, and the way...
Teresa Bazak and her son Drew decide to go geocaching. Campers plug a set of coordinates into a GPS unit that takes them to various scenic locations in the park. 2 hours and four sets of coordinates later, Teresa and Drew find their cache.
Oh yeah, look at that. We found it.
Geocachers are able to trade a trinket they brought with them for one that's already inside the box.
Just, oh. See?
Some stuff in there.
Drew trades a pig-shaped shoelace charm for a plastic Pikachu toy. This might not seem like a huge accomplishment, but the goal of the ICAN program is to get families to spend time together outdoors, away from the TV and video games. Nick says that for him, the most rewarding part of the experience is watching families bond in the woods.
I love hearing, "I want to go camping again." A lot of the people that come through this program have not done things that I took for granted when I was growing up. Like last year, there were kids that said the only fishing they've ever done was on a video game before, and I got to take them fishing for their first time. I've taught people how to make s'mores for the first time. That is a really big reward.
Circled around the campfire with roasting sticks in hand is the Moore family.
Mary.
Kathy.
Christy.
Kieran.
And?
Nick.
What are you doing, Nick?
I'm roasting some marshmallows.
What are you going to make with them?
S'mores!
Yeah! I've got a little stockpile here if anyone's hungry. Oh my.
Jayapa Katage is one of a group of three Indian families who are camping for their first time.
It's really like awesome. We loved it. And like it's so much enjoyable and like it's a pleasure to meet with all of you guys. Like cross-cultural and then like a very good atmosphere. Yeah, it's a mix and match.
Jayapa says that he brought the family camping to get away from the long hours he puts in at work.
I've been in the United States like from past 7 years, but like this is my first camping, and I really feel like why I missed like all these days, like this kind of campings.
At the other end of the table, a group of little girls eat curried kebabs and beam about their favorite parts of the trip as the adults cook popcorn over the fire.
My name is
awesome, because the best thing I did today is...
Eating.
No. I saw a deer.
My name is Lashna. My best thing is a baby deer.
My name is Sucha, and my best part was looking out at the top of the car while coming here.
I saw you as you were coming here. You were making a lot of noise at the top of the car.
In the morning, as Nick and his campers pack up, they make an effort to protect the environment by leaving no trace behind. According to the DNR, the program is working. With attendance increasing every year, more campers will now have the skills to bring them back to the woods.
I'm sure you're tired.
And a few good stories to boot.
You've been listening to the Real College Podcast, online and on the air, Sundays at 6 p.m. on Radio K. Tonight you heard the voices of Max Fuller, Noel Clark, and Jared Hemming. Our producer Max Fuller, David Lean, Jackie Renzetti, Patrick Sharkey, and I'm your host Matthew Curtis. You can find us online on RadioK.org, PRX and iTunes, and also on Radio K. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and thank you for listening.